This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Nina Chanel Abney uses art to examine popular culture and racial politics. She was attracted to drawing and painting at a young age. As a kid growing up outside of Chicago, she would make collages out of comics from the newspaper. As she grew older, she began to explore more political themes. There's a collection of Nina's work currently on display at the Nasher Museum of Art in Durham. The exhibit is called Nina Chanel Abney, Royal Flush, and it runs through mid-July. And Nina Chanel Abney is here now to talk about her work. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about growing up outside of Chicago, your exposure to art and your sense of you as an artist as a young woman.
Well, I grew up in the south suburbs of Chicago. I was born in Harvey, Illinois, and then later moved to Matteson, Illinois. So as a child, I was always drawing and painting. I came across one of my mom's old paint sets and realized that she also did art at some point for a hobby. And I was just always drawing. And then I eventually went to college at Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois, where I double majored as a for computer science and art. And that's when I really kind of started to get into it more.
Well, tell us about those collages and the comics. Was it, were you just amusing yourself at the time, or did you see themes develop as a young girl?
I mean, when I think about it now, I feel like it's completely related to my work as me creating my own worlds and drawing from different elements. So, yeah, I would cut out different characters from different comics and then kind of play with them as my own world and put them together.
That's interesting. So, and you've talked about, too, I've heard you talk about growing up at various times in your career in school being sort of one of very few African Americans in your class and what that was like for you.
Yeah, well, I guess pretty much all the way up until high school, my sister and I were pretty much at times the only black students in the entire school. And then when I went to high school, it was a completely opposite experience, but I think it was a good experience.
I mean, were you conscious of that at the time? I mean, were you aware of that and sort of running a commentary in your own mind about being in that situation? Or
I was very aware. I mean, and my family was very aware. So actually, in the summers, my aunt basically had a summer school for Black History, and my friends and I would attend it every summer kind of to fill in the gaps of what we weren't being taught at the schools we were going to.
So you talked about going to undergrad for studio art and computer science. Were you hoping to be an artist at the time? What were your plans at that moment?
My plans first was to be a programmer. Then that turned into me wanting to be a graphic designer. Mm-hmm. I still painted, but I really didn't have an idea of how an artist would get paid. So I figured, if I combine the two, I can be a graphic designer, design websites, and then that's why I thought I would make a living.
What about your insights into and consciousness about politics? When did they emerge?
I think it really started to emerge when I was an undergrad because we had a few incidents of racism on campus where the students organized a big walkout on campus. So I think that's when I really start to integrate those kind of issues in my work.
I was going to ask you that. I mean, it's one thing to become conscious of it, but then are you working it into your art?
Yeah, so I actually had a thesis show also for undergrad, and in that body of work, it was a direct response into what the incidents that were going on campus at that time.
How did that manifest itself in your work? Did it change your style or simply the content and theme of your work?
I think mostly the content and the theme. I mean, before I feel like I was making work, but it was void of any content, really.
So you talked about this computer science, maybe they have a fallback on that, or graphic design, and that's at least a way to get paid for your art. And then you also you had a job in industry. You worked for a Ford Motor Company for a while, right?
Yeah, I took a year off after undergrad, and my mom knew someone who worked there, so she helped me get a job there, and I worked the year I took off, but between undergrad and grad school.
And that was not the work for you. See, I'm happy to meet someone your age, someone who's young, because I realized I worked at a factory too, and just a year and a half at a factory is plenty to tell you that this is not where you want to work.
Oh, yeah, plenty.
But there's no factories left. So when I tell my grandchildren this, they're just going to give me that funny look, like, what are you talking about? Because so at least you've had experience in a factory. And it had pretty much the same effect on you, did it not?
Oh, for sure. I feel like it might still be open because I was at Ford Motor Company in Chicago. So I believe that one is still open. But it was definitely hard work, for sure, because I was on the assembly line.
Mm. So tell us more. You went to grad school, and your MFA thesis, you presented a piece called Class of 2007, which I believe is also on display at the Nasher, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about the Class of 2007.
So prior to creating that piece, I set out to do a class portrait. I was inspired by the work of Adrienne Piper. She did a performance piece called Calling Cards, which visually people wouldn't necessarily know she was African American, but so at parties people might make a racist joke. So she would pass them a card silently that basically told them that she was black. So I was immediately inspired by that approach, kind of being passive aggressive, but it inspired me to do this painting, so I basically turned all of my classmates black for the portrait, and they didn't know until the day of the show.
And there's someone in here, and is this you, the guard?
Oh, yeah, I made myself. So also my classmates are prisoners in the painting, and I'm a white prison guard.
A none too attractive white prison guard, I would say.
Yeah.
Just I suspect that was a part of what's going on here. You also, these are art students, right? This
yes.
is an art class. And you find that some of them were offended by this work. Is that right?
I could tell some of them were visibly uncomfortable with it.
Tell us about the style, because there is a kind of caricature quality in this painting. It's clearly something that is provocative and intense. So there's nothing cartoonish about it. But the style is very much in a kind of a caricature form.
Well, I've always enjoyed, I guess, cartoons that had a lot of sarcasm in them. Droopy, Huckleberry Hound, Family Guy. And then also I just always was trying to find a way to touch on loaded topics without kind of deterring the viewer from engaging with them. So I found by use of color and just that kind of style of, I guess what you would say, a cartoonish mm-hmm. way would lend itself well to feeling more welcoming to the viewer.
And it's interesting because it has that effect. And you're drawn to it because it appears to be a cartoon. So all of my defenses are down. This is going to be a happy moment, a cartoon. And then now that I'm in and I'm open, it starts to crash in on me. So that's what happens to me as the viewer, as the consumer of this, or the one who's enjoying the art. What about you as the artist? Where do you start with this theme?
Well, this for that particular painting, I was thinking about the disproportionate number of black males in prison. Then also I was trying to somehow mash that together with the idea of it, well, there not being a lot of black students enrolled in MFA programs, because at the time, while I was also at Parsons, I was working in the admissions office. So I saw the amount of applicants.
The exhibit at the Nasher Museum of Art is called Royal Flush. Tell us more about that exhibit and kind of what these pieces mean to you.
So Royal Flush pretty much is my work over the last 10 years. So it really gives everyone an idea of the progression of my work.
What's your idea of the progression of your work? How has it changed?
I feel like visually it's changed. It's become a lot more abstract and I guess a little more busier than it was earlier. But overall, I can still see a lot of similarities to the earlier work.
Do you have any of your ideas about these themes changed in that period of time?
I don't think so. I'm still responding to the news and whatever is happening in the moment. So that's never changed.
Tell us about this one, insight.com.
So that piece, I actually did a month-long residency in Brazil, and that was from a body of work that I did there, responding just to, I guess I would say, the racial climate out there, things that I experienced. And also, that was the first time that I began to incorporate using the computer to actually create some of my paintings.
So these are these. Well, tell us about it. Maybe you can describe the images for us and to what extent the computer was used to generate them, or did you do them by hand? How are they?
So I create the a lot of the background elements in Photoshop, and then I print it onto canvas, and then from there I paint and spray paint on top of it.
So these are images, and again, they almost look like cutouts in some ways, less like cartoons than the previous image, and more like cutouts, and the color is very important here as well.
Well, around this time also, I became more interested in simplifying the figure and kind of also responding to emojis and just creating a simpler language.
It's interesting to think about that. You've got, on the one hand, the themes and the content that can come straight out of the newspapers, and there are narratives that can certainly be print and verbal, but it's interesting to think about the iconography of the digital age, the way in which the landscape that we see, right, and how that has changed over the past 50, 60, 70 years, and how that might influence an artist.
Well, I'm fascinated by just text messaging and all the iconography of emojis and how one symbol could mean, I guess, like a million things depending on where you come from or your friends and your own slang and language that you guys use amongst each other. From going from using, I don't know, a parentheses and a colon to make a smiley face on the phone till now, it's pretty amazing.
Does it change the vernacular for an artist, the way you think about making images?
I think, yes, it does. I feel like before I was more focused on, I guess, attempting to paint more realistically, and then I realized that I could take the most simplified version of, I don't know, a hand, and everyone would still know what it was. So I'm more interested in that now.
Yeah, and again, because of the way we've moved these icons around and where these kind of stylized schematics have very easily translated, where they print, we get it. And then you think about the ways in which imagery and narratives can change, anything like Facebook, any social media where I can construct a completely false narrative with a picture of myself and a false identity, and the way these snippets, factoids of life can be put together and create whole new images. I mean, we're all becoming kind of artists in our own right in the way we're using social media to construct whole lives.
Oh, yeah, for sure, especially on like Instagram and looking at everyone's Instagram and how it's curated pretty much.
So here's another one. I want you to talk a little bit about this piece too, Ivy and the Janitor, which I think reflects, which I think was inspired by a subway ride, right?
Yes, that piece was actually in response. Studio Museum of Harlem asked me to create an image for them to put in one of their magazines at the time. So I basically imagined just a ride on a 2 train going up to 125th Street.
Now, there is a man here who appears to have 2 heads. tell us about this individual.
Well, I think I just was kind of responding to just the different personalities on the train.
Yeah. It's fascinating stuff. And again, I think, again, inspired by the ways in which we've kind of disintegrated and reintegrated ourselves in ways that social media has made possible that wouldn't, again, not possible 50 years ago. You would have to sort of lead a double life and be two whole people. Who are your inspirations these days? Who inspires you?
Right now, I'm still very inspired by Stuart Davis. I became aware of his work probably about 2012. And since then, he's definitely an inspiration. I like the work of Peter Saul. And also,
what is it about their work that inspires you?
I like how Stuart Davis, our process is very alike in responding to music and the work being almost improvisational, and how he used text also is very interesting to me.
When you say improvisational, do you use music, or just that metaphor of improvisation?
I do listen to music, but also the metaphor, because I don't plan any of my work out. It's all intuitive. So,
do you find yourself following the thread, using that style, that intuitive style? Do you generally follow that thread, that trail to the end, or do you meet many, many dead ends at which you have to start over again?
I think I follow it to the end. Yeah. I mean, I pretty much just, as I'm thinking of things, put in the work.
Wow. Do you, and your link, certainly your work has political themes, an activist bent. Do you see your work plan? I mean, do you feel that your work is activist, that it's meant to inspire political activism?
I'm still trying to, I guess, figure that out. But I'm more, I just want to start the conversation. So I guess if that's an act of activism, then I'm here for it. But I really just want to bring people together to from different walks of life to start the conversation, whether everyone agrees or not. That's, you know, that doesn't matter to me.
Well, in this case, the conversation continues at the Nasher Museum of Art in Durham. And my guest is Nina Chanel Abney. Nina, thank you so much for being on
the
show.
Thank you for having me.
Her work on display now through mid-July at the Nasher Museum of Art in Durham. It's called Nina Chanel Abney Royal Flush. And we have more information at our website, stateofthings.org. Movies on the Radio is coming up, and we're talking about dystopian films. I don't think it has anything to do with the November election. But if you think it does, why, sure, give us a call. Or better yet, send us an email, sot@wnc.org. Tweet us using hashtag SOT movie if you want to be on Movies on the Radio to talk about your favorite dystopian film for Movies on the Radio coming up next week. State of Things produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Ormond, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.